So I'm Christopher Stanley Stevens, and we're at our house. Tonight, Chuck and Cynthia Reeves are really actually doing the interview. I just have StoryCorps loaded on my phone and with the StoryCorps app. So no matter what you may be looking for, you might see that Christopher Stanley Stevens is doing the interview. Well, that's wrong. Chuck and Cynthia Reeves are doing the interview, and Christopher Stanley Stevens, that being me, is the person giving the interview. And so Chuck and Cynthia, welcome.
Oh, thanks. We're glad to be here.
We are blessed to be here.
Yeah, thanks for being people that I would even want to tell this stuff to. You know,
I think it's an important story that I know you want and need to tell.
Yeah.
And everybody should have the blessing of being able to hear it.
Oh, yeah. Thank you. Yeah. Yeah, it is interesting. The need or want to tell is definitely true. And before I forget it.
Absolutely.
Yes.
You know?
Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's fresh in your mind.
Yeah. So kind of what I had in mind wanting to talk about, as you all know, of course, is just the last 8 or 9 months of dear Leslie's life. And I can only imagine that this, of course, will be emotional to me, and that's good, whatever it is. I certainly wouldn't want to wait to tell it before I felt like it would be unemotional, because that'll never be.
Right, it'll be never, that's right.
Yeah, yeah. So,
and
go ahead.
It's good to be in safe company.
Yeah, right. Yeah, right, right, right. Yeah, and as I was thinking about talking about this, I know that two words came to mind about what I kind of themes for what I saw so much through Leslie's last 9 or 8 months. And that one of those things was her heroism, and the other was just the role of love in providing comfort along the way, but also ennobling the process and certainly transforming the process. So love had played such a massive role in it. So just to say what happened, because it's obvious to us, isn't it, what happened? But so what happened is that Leslie started becoming really ill with different symptoms in September. She had back pain. She haven't had knee pain, but she also had the stomach pain. And so she thought, you know, they're all unrelated. So she went to different people, and the knee pain was unrelated. However, the back pain and stomach pain was clearly related. And then the next symptom was just this profound fatigue, just this fatigue that would grow day by day. And it, you know, as it turned out, through about a process of nearly 3 weeks, maybe a month of going to doctors, then finally going to the hospital until we got the diagnosis of 4th stage pancreatic neuroendocrine cancer, you know, and differentiated from there what they would call a high-grade tumor, which meant that it was, first they said fast-growing, and then later they would say aggressive. You know, so it was, a rare, fast-growing, late stage. So that was on October 22nd when we got that diagnosis. And then it was on June 22nd that she died. And June 22nd being the day after the anniversary of her mother's death.
Really?
Which was June 21st.
Wow. Hmm.
I think 1977. Leslie's mom was 54 on when she died, and Leslie was 55. Yeah.
Incredible.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Kathy, Leslie's sister, was 22 when their mom died, and Forrest and Parker were 22 when Leslie died.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, yeah.
Remarkable.
Yeah, it is. It is. So that's what happened. And you know, really, and a kind of a breakdown of what happened was Leslie was gravely ill. So in the hospital, she could only take a few steps, 10, 12 steps, with assistance in the hospital. You know, she'd be in the bed. I'd walk with her to the bathroom, or and then at one point she was able to, like, walk out into the hallway and then back. But literally 12 steps with assistance. And her liver was rigid and distended, and, you know, you could see how it was pushing on her abdomen, and her liver enzymes were just out of this world high, and she had a collapsed, they thought it was a blood clot, but she had a collapsed major artery, the inferior vena cava was collapsed because the tumors were so, yeah, they thought it was a blood clot, but, you know, through good diagnostic work, they said, no, it's just compressed.
Wow.
And so they put a stent in, and that helped that. But she went from that to all her liver enzymes were within normal range, and she was walking. She'd walk for 40 minutes, and we went for a 2-hour bike ride in March, and on no pain medication, on no nausea medication, you know? So she got from that really terrible, dire state in October to that really much better state in March, April.
Mm-hmm.
But then the pain started coming back in her back. And I often think about how hard it would have been to admit and to say out loud, oh, my back hurts. Because
yeah.
She knew that was the earliest symptom.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So
it was through the effective chemo?
Yeah. And so that's halfway of what happened. So my mind goes to heroism at this point, and Leslie's heroism, because I really want to remember this. I think I want it recorded. But the first piece of it that I'm thinking of is when we were in Linda Heflin's office on the Friday before we went to Fort Worth and she was hospitalized. And it was that call that no person wants from their primary care physician of, hey, we got your results back. You need to come in the office. And Leslie said, can't you just tell me on the phone? And she said, no, you need to come in and bring Christopher with you. Mm-hmm. You know, it was that kind of call. And so we went in, and Leslie had been trying to, while she was waiting for the results to get back, Leslie had been trying to make appointments with a gastroenterologist and this and that, and it just wasn't going well. But when we got into Linda's office, you know, she regretted to tell us all about the CAT scan, you know, and she had a really difficult time telling us. But Leslie, the thing I remember that felt so kind and heroic to me, mm-hmm. was even in the midst of that really bad news, she was truly grateful to the office manager who managed to get Leslie an appointment with a gastroenterologist that Leslie really liked. And Leslie could not get in with this guy, you know. And so, you know, just her kind of expressions of kindness and gratitude about being able to get into the doctor, you know. Even in the midst, yeah. So, and that's something that would happen over and over again, that even in the midst of her really, I mean, some of the worst news you can get, and a lot of pain and a lot of procedures, she would often offer kindness to the folks who were providing care, and to me, certainly to me too. I remember when we were in the hospital, how there was a day that, and you know how a hospital is, right? Mm-hmm. They're horrible. Oh, yeah. They're inhospitable. They're horrible. And Leslie was, she was doing all these diagnostic tests, just one after another. I think she had maybe, this will sound like an insane number, but I'm pretty sure this is right, 6 different little procedures, diagnostic procedures, and she couldn't have anything to drink and certainly nothing to eat. And she's this horrible, ill, sick. You know, it's not like us going in and doing 6 procedures.
Yeah, she was really sick.
Horribly ill. You know, so ill that, you know, when they would roll her around the hospital in the big beds, and taking a bump hard would be distressing. You know, she was just in pain, and ugh, it's terrible. At one point, she got another piece of bad news, and she had her phone with her, and there was just this little video that she would watch, because it was of a parrot singing along to the owner playing a little organ, you know, and she would just listen to that just to try to boost herself up, you know, and it's just, ugh. She was working so, she heroically, this is the big theme, she heroically partnered with life to try to live.
Right.
You know, over and over and over again. I mean, through the chemo and through the doctor's visits and through horrible, and it's not an overstatement to say it was horrible, horrible visits to MD Anderson where they would not use the data that we would send down in order to consult. You know, and so we would go down to MD Anderson. This was the guy at MD Anderson, was at MD Anderson. So we worked really hard to go down there, get down there, give all the information, and then they wouldn't have it. You know, and she weathered that. I remember that visit, you know, so there we were. This is the guy. She searched. She talked to people in California. I'll go anywhere. Where's the place to go? MD Anderson, you know, go see this guy. We're at this guy. And she was not, she was doing worse by this point. This was probably sometime in April, you know, and he came in. And he was talking away, and it was obvious and clear that we knew more than he did.
About her condition.
Yes. Yes, because he was saying stuff that we knew that that's not. You know? And she asked, she said, so have you seen the CAT scan we sent? And he said, no. And, you know, and she stayed calm. She said, well, we have a CAT scan that's loaded into your system, blah, 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 blah. And he said, oh, I'm sorry. And they left, and 3 different people came in and apologized, and we probably waited about an hour, probably, for them to get it together, and then to come back in and give a better look, you know. Then he was helpful. But I remember being in that visit, and I was working so hard to stay calm, because you can't yell and scream, because then they will be upset that you yelled and screamed, and then you don't get the job done.
Right. Shut doors.
Right, exactly. And I was just focusing on breathing, and she was able, and she's sick, right? She is ill. She's got 4th stage pancreatic cancer. She is ill, and she is still able just to ask questions so that they could get on board that they didn't have a clue. And then come back around, 3 people apologize, including the doctor, and away we go. You know, that to me is heroically partnering with life to try to get the job done.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, she did that, and she did that, and she did that over and again. Those are just, you know, there are others that come to mind, but just won't go into them at this time. And that's when she was, you know, heroically partnering with life. And then it became clear that more treatment would cause harm. You know, so she was getting treatment. And despite the fact that she was getting treatment, the tumors were growing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it wasn't like she stopped treatment and the tumors were growing, you know. But she was actively treating and the tumors were growing. And she probably did 5 rounds of chemo beyond the standard 6. Because that's just the degree, you know, she was doing all that she could do,
yeah.
Just really partnering with it. And in each, you know, it became clearer and clearer, this isn't working. And I remember when we were at MD Anderson for the second time to consult, and, you know, it's clearly the CAT scan even showed, and this time they had all the CAT scans and they did a much better job. You know, and it's like, you know, he said, okay, yeah, clearly the tumors are growing, they're larger, and this was at a time that she was on a second line of treatment. And he said, you know, there is another thing that we could do, but we don't expect each successive line of treatment. We expect it to be less effective than the latter, the last one. And in my mind, I'm thinking, and the last one didn't work at all.
Right.
Right. And Leslie wasn't ready to stop treatment then, but 10 days later, she was.
Mm-hmm.
10 days later, she was.
She just had to think about it.
Yeah, and yeah, and who wouldn't, right?
Sure.
Yeah, and
sure,
yeah, right. And so what happened 10 days later was we were in at the Fort Worth oncologist where it was really great treatment, very excellent treatment in a smaller setting. And so we went in for that visit, and 3 days before that visit on a Monday, you know, Leslie, her pain was significant and really horrible. She was just gravely ill. And she said, one morning, she said, you know, my goal for today is to get through today. And then tomorrow, to get through tomorrow. The next day, to get through that day. And then go see Dr. Ip in Fort Worth. No, I mean, not Dr. Ip. Dr. Zhang in Fort Worth. And to start treatment and to get better. But I am, on hindsight, I am confident that also what she was doing in her mind was preparing that if option A of treatment isn't viable or isn't going to work, I'm ready for option B. I'm not ready. But I'm prepared to take option B, which is partnering with death. And that sounds like a harsh way to say it, but I mean, she was ready to let go. She did. I mean, she knew what was up ahead for her because she had already experienced so much in the hospital, and she was experiencing. I mean, it is no exaggeration to say, every 36 hours or 48 hours, you know, I could see her getting worse. It was aggressive, and she could feel, you know, she would say, my stomach feels kind of bigger. And she was losing weight because she could eat like a piece of cantaloupe or 2 bites of Jell-O and just that so she could take her medication.
Right.
You know, is because the tumors were compressing her stomach, you know. And so she could see. And the reason I say I'm really confident she was preparing for this was that she had a new symptom, and she would call it antsy. I just feel really antsy, antsy. And we would talk to the doctor and triage folks about these symptoms. And at one point, you know, Leslie was, you know, what's going on? And she said, well, I feel really antsy. And I said, well, you know, in this and that. And I said, well, do you want to take some more morphine or Norco? And she said, well, you know, there's just not a pill for this. There's not a pill for that. And I remember on the Monday or Tuesday when we got back from Fort Worth and she had gone on hospice, I felt really antsy. And what was going on with me was preparing for her to die, you know.
Right.
And she said, how are you doing? I said, I feel pretty antsy. And she said, I understand, you know. She understood. Because just this like nervous energy of
agitated.
Yeah, coming to grips with this.
Yes.
Yeah, and so when we're in the hospital, we were at Dr. Zhang's on that Monday, 10 days after MD Anderson, we were there, and she had to be weak. She had to have a wheelchair to go into the office because she just needed to. And usually every other visit, she would write down all of her questions, but we were waiting for him to come in. I said, "So, you know, hon, what do you want to talk to Dr. Zhang about?" And the first one was, "How do I feel better?" And the last one was hospice. You know, there were four questions. The others were probably, I don't know what they were, but those were one in four.
Mm-hmm.
And Dr. Zhang looked at the blood and looked at Leslie and just said, "You know, I think that more treatment will just make you worse." And Leslie, I was kind of surprised, and I think he said, "And I wouldn't recommend, no, and if you wanted to do treatment, we would do that, but I think it'll make you worse." And Leslie would keep asking questions to the point of saying, "What is your advice? What is your medical advice?" You know, and he said to stop treatment and to go on hospice. You know, she wanted, it was interesting. I'm not for sure why she had it go to such clarity, but she did. And I think that she had to be, I don't know whether she wanted it to be absolutely clear in her own mind or if she wanted it to be absolutely clear in my mind. I don't know.
Or both.
Or both, right. Yeah, or both.
I wouldn't think she'd want to have anybody say she didn't try her
hardest. Yeah, very, yeah.
Quit too soon.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And my goodness, yeah. Yeah, she could have gone on hospice 6 or 8 weeks earlier, I'm sure. I'm sure of that. She just so heroically partnered with doing all that she could to live and to live well. So many things. I mean, just in her lifestyle and what she ate and what she didn't eat and going to treatment and staying calm in the face of really frustratingly disappointing doctor's visits. Oy.
Mm-hmm.
Oy. And then when it was clear that there was no remedy, there was no prolonging or improving the quality of life, she just really released her spirit to dying. And she literally walked towards her death. Mm-hmm. We talked about, you know, when they have Forrest and Parker come up, and one of the first things she said when, you know, about hospice was, "You know, I don't want any visitors." And later she said, "I don't want any texts." And fortunately, a person up at the clinic in Fort Worth, she said, "You know, when people are dying, they close in," and she kind of used the analogy of going into a cocoon so that you can, you know, be transformed. And that was helpful. And she said, "I'm telling you this so you don't take it personally."
Absolutely.
You know?
That was a blessing to you.
Yeah, absolutely. And also, it reinforced kind of what I was doing anyway, because I said to Leslie more than once, "Hey, I'm not asking you every hour of every day how you're doing. I wonder and I think, but I don't think it'd be helpful for me to keep asking. You know, so I would hold back, and because I just trusted that she would bring forth as much as she wanted. And I mean, and she said, "Yeah, I know, I understand, and I know you love me and that you're there." And so, yeah, so it was one affirming, but also helped me understand that she was just working on dying.
Mm-hmm. It's a journey.
Yeah, right. And so we were driving home and we kind of made this plan, you know, call Forrest and Parker, have them come up on Tuesday for a 20-minute visit to go back to their place in Georgetown to go back to work on Wednesday. And they came up on Tuesday for a visit, and that all went pretty well. Leslie could only be in the room for a little bit, and then she'd need to move from chair to chair. And I told Forrest and Parker, you know, every time you talk to your mom, let it be in your mind that that could be the last time you talk to her. And they had already done a lot of work to make sure they had said everything, you know, to her, even at like at Mother's Day and all that.
Mm-hmm.
And then, so they left, and there was definitely a very different feeling, you know, when they left. But, you know, like, so that night, Tuesday night, you know, we were laying in bed together. And I was holding her hand, and she was holding mine. And I told her it was okay to die. You know, she'd been wonderful in all these different ways. A perfect wife for me, certainly. And she said, thank you. And we did this more than once. We would, you know, like lay in bed at night. Because, you know, by this point, she would just sleep better and I would sleep better, you know, if we would sleep separately. So she'd say, you know, you can come rest with me for 20 minutes.
Right.
Yes.
But like that night, you know, I stayed there longer. And we kind of had a practice. We didn't do it every night, but we would do it some, where I would just say, you know, let's just open our hearts and minds to all the love that's here for us. And we would do that, and I would say, and I'll pray for you. And so that night, she took a really hard turn for the worst. And I called the hospice nurse on Wednesday morning because I said, you know, Leslie's her breathing, she's got a lot of fluid in her lungs, and it's really loud. And I just kind of thought Leslie would wake up and cough that out. And she didn't. So I called the hospice nurse, and she said, oh, we can clear that out. You know, we can clear that out. And I said, well, I didn't say it calmly at all. I was crying a lot. But I said, could we just let this be what gets Leslie? Because she was ready to go.
She'd suffered a long time.
Ugh. She was ready to go. And she said, yeah, you know, and she said, we can give her morphine, you know, so that she doesn't suffer, right? And I said, that would be really good. And so she came over, and before she went back to see her, I had her sit down in the living room, and just to go over again, that we can do this, right? I mean, and she said, yes. And so we went back, and started giving her morphine. Gave her morphine that usually she'd take 2 tablets in a day of the morphine because they're extended release. And she said, well, what we'll do is we'll crush that up and we'll put a little water in it, liquefy it, and then just put it in her mouth. Because she was not very responsive at this point.
Mm.
And we gave her 2 doses in 20 minutes. And the nurse took her blood pressure, and the blood pressure came down. She said, you know, the breathing is like it is, but she's not having a perception of struggling or anything. Mm-hmm. So, yeah. And, you know, and I would talk to Leslie, and when Connie first came, I said, Connie's here. She's going to help us, and we're going to give you more morphine and all this. And And it, Leslie could kind of respond non-verbally a little bit. But, yeah. But she was definitely just walking, I think, towards death. And completely opened her heart and mind to letting that be the remedy. That just kind of rocked on all during that day. And I called, well, in the morning I called Forrest and Parker, because fortunately they spent the night. And then they came over, and, you know, the three of us would go back there and we would talk to her, and Forrest and Parker did a great job of, you know, expressing their love and appreciation and care and gratitude towards her, and also saying, you know, it's okay to go.
Yeah.
And so, you know, it's hard for me to imagine. Well, I know what it was like for me. But, you know, so imagine being 22
mm-hmm.
and seeing your mom struggle with breath, loud breath. And so they would talk about how hard it was to be there, but they were glad to be there.
Yeah.
You know, and so they were there for her when she and we needed them the most.
They wanted to be real.
Oh, yeah, and you're absolutely right. Yep, and they were, and they were. And then about 3:10, it was really a beautiful, wonderful kind of thing how Connie was about to leave. Forrest and Parker and I were just kind of moseying back to be a little bit with Leslie, because we'd be with Leslie a little while and then say, hey, we'll give you a break. And then we'd go back a little bit. And we all, and Connie was about to leave, and she noticed that Leslie's breathing had changed. And we, it's really interesting how we all just kind of very naturally gravitated back to the room at really around the precise moment when Connie said, hey, she's just gone to this last stage before dying. Because there must be a standard way of breathing changes, and that had occurred. And she said, do you hear that breathing change? And I did a little bit, but she knew what she was talking about. But anyway, she said, this is the last phase. This is the last stage. And so we were there with her, and that lasted about 4 minutes. You know, we were talking to Leslie. Forrest and Parker were holding her hands. You know, and I was by her shoulder. And one of the things that I said was that blessing from Deuteronomy, may the Lord bless you and keep you, right? And then she just stopped. And I remembered something that you said, that how, like, the dying was like in a twinkle of an eye. It's the getting up to that that is such the labor.
Mm-hmm.
And it was just like that. And I was thinking of that. And also, later, I was thinking about how just that role of breath in the lungs in just life. Because when Leslie was carrying Forrest and Parker, the big goal was for her to carry them up into 37 weeks, you know, so that their lungs could be fully developed. And then just her labor to birth them at a time when their lungs could help them sustain life.
Right.
And then for her, you know, the labor unto death, and it was the lungs that helped her go out.
Yeah.
You know, just the importance of that breath and spirit, and yeah.
It's the thing that you and I talked about, that the walk to death is the hard part, but the death itself is, we just said that, you know, it's that, I said, for Messiah, it's a solo.
Oh.
Know? And in the moment, in the twinkling of an eye, and we shall all be changed.
Yeah, yeah.
and so it's a beautiful moment, but it's a tremendously sad moment too. But it's over.
With a sense of relief when you've been struggling.
Yeah,
yes.
It is.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, absolute relief. Ugh. Yeah, when Connie said, yeah, we can let her leave and let this be what gets her. So it is all these, what in my, before I would say when all these opposites would simultaneously arise at the same time, you know, relief and sad and amazing and sad and bad and good and all these things. And now what I say is, those things are not opposites. They just arise, and it's my mind that splits them into two somethings. It's just awe, you know? And so it's almost like it's just the best thing is almost to say nothing in the face of that, just because any word diminishes it or divides it and makes it less than what it already is. So it's
beyond language.
Yes, it's that.
It's an experience that we can't put into words.
Yes. It's that.
Profound.
Yes, it's that. Yeah.
What a beautiful story you told us.
Yeah.
Thank you for sharing that.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, it's interesting, when I came and visited and she asked me to pray, I felt anxious about that. I'm telling you that now because I wouldn't want to tell you that at the time. But,
sure.
And I told some other people, I told Cynthia, that I hope that I said the right prayer, and I thought, well, I don't know, what is the right prayer? When someone's approaching the end of their life, just to say, I love you, is really the most important thing.
Yeah.
And hopefully that
came
out. And that God loves you, and God's with you at that moment.
Right.
Through the struggle and then beyond.
Right.
So I think you said it, you know, she moved on.
Yes, absolutely.
Passed over, I think the music expression you used.
Yeah, that was so much it. She died and passed over, or died and crossed over.
Crossed over.
Yeah, crossed over. Absolutely. Yes. Yeah, and so...
the amazing lesson.
Yeah, right. Yeah,
Very amazing. Just so
heroically...
so courageous.
Right. Heroically partnered with life, and then released unto death, yeah. Yeah, yeah.
Hope we all can do as well. What a great example.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah. So I think this will be a good place to stop.
Thank you for sharing.
Is that all right? Yeah, thank you. Thank you.